Lucky.
So sometimes a simple conversation can feel risky, especially if you're talking with someone you disagree with, like Thanksgiving's coming up. A lot of people are going to, okay. But I've had this experience, I'm sure some of you have. You're at a dinner table, your sister's new boyfriend shows up and decides Thanksgiving dinner would be a nice time to share his political opinions with everybody, and maybe they just turn out to be really violently opposed to yours. What do you do? Most of us change the subject, right? We don't want to get into it. You know, we avoid having uncomfortable conversations, especially with people we disagree with. But public radio producer Scott Carrier has traveled the world looking for uncomfortable conversations and making them happen, like this.
A couple weeks ago, I was watching Donald Trump on television, wondering how he's a rude, arrogant, condescending, chauvinistic egomaniac. What if he were president and got angry and had a fit? But then I realized I don't actually know any Trump supporters. Never met one, never heard one on the radio, or seen one on TV. So I decided I should go drive around Nevada and find some.
That's from Scott Carrier's podcast series, Home of the Brave. A bunch of these pieces have aired on This American Life, Marketplace, Day to Day, All Things Considered. He is public radio's own. So let's welcome Peabody Award-winning public radio producer Scott Carrier. Scott, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, so this trip you took, this is feels to me like this is what Scott Carrier does. Decides there's somebody he doesn't know, somebody he might disagree with, and so he's like driving several states worth to go find some.
The Trump story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just hadn't heard any of them on the radio or on television, and it kind of bothers me, you know, if there's a big story and the media's not talking to people. That, you know, it seems like obvious, like, well, why don't you talk to some Trump supporters? I'd like to hear what they have to say. And I hadn't. I mean, I don't think I was the only one. I think it was just not being done. So I was like, well, I can do that. And so, and I knew that there'd be a lot in Nevada. So,
so what do you do? You just go for a drive across the state border and say, do you like Trump?
Yeah, I look for people that I think might be good to talk to. That's because, you know, when it comes right down to it, most people are really not very interesting. When to talk to them, just walk up to them and talk to them. So you kind of have to look for people who want to talk and have something to say.
So you met this woman, Lorraine Batts. And,
right. She was the first one.
Yeah, it's Elko, Nevada.
Yeah.
Right. So I want to actually, let's hear a little bit of this conversation, because this is a moment that I love in this piece where you're talking with her and you ask her what she thinks about some of Trump's policies, especially immigration. Here, let's hear her answer.
I'd like to know how he really wants to enforce immigration. I realize that dealing with all the illegals that are in our country is going to be extremely difficult. And we lived with it when we were stationed in San Diego for 10 years. You know, so, you know, I know.
With the military.
Yes, with the military. My husband's retired Navy. So, can I say this?
Sure.
It's terrible. But at night, when the sun goes down, it's like cockroaches invading. But there are people crossing, coming over the hills, and you would see their trash and their garbage and everything else, and the dirty diapers in the bushes. You know, you have a different look when you're actually living down there with it than people who are very sanitized and uppity and in their highbrow neighborhoods. They don't see some of the other things.
I can't believe she said that to you.
Yeah. There's a lot of racism, emotions like that around. It's just that unless you go looking for it, you don't usually come across it, I guess.
But so that's the kind of conversation. I mean, what did you do to make her feel safe enough to say that?
Right. Yeah, that's important. People need to have some sense of trust or else they won't tell you anything. Maybe to talk about the weather or something. So I don't know. It's something that has to happen quickly or it doesn't happen at all. And I just tell people who I am and what I'm doing and what the program is, you know, that I'm working for.
And she didn't hear public radio and go, yeah.
No, she'd heard of it. A lot of people had never heard of public radio. She had heard of it. And so I just try to be honest and direct. And people understand the idea of free speech, of saying what they believe, that that's important, and that a lot of people have never been asked. And so they're kind of, some people are glad to say what they think.
I know we've talked, you and I, about how much fear gets in the way of people asking and answering questions. She, you know, you probably show up and you probably look like a public radio person, former college professor kind
yeah,
of person.
Yeah, I think I do. Yeah, and, I look yeah, at
yeah. Right.
Liberal. And, I look, I'm yeah, a, yeah.
The glasses
easy to
are
spot.
A giveaway.
Yep. Yeah.
But so are you aware of doing anything yourself to try to make yourself more approachable or to connect with somebody who may have reason to feel suspicious of you?
So I try not to be afraid and just very straightforward. And, you know, I am genuinely interested in what they think. And I think people can tell that. They can pick up on that. They know I'm not one of them. But I'm sincere, I'm earnest, and I'm giving them a chance to speak on national, you know, radio. So if they don't want to, that's fine. It's no problem.
The other thing I really like, what you did in this piece is... she said this thing, it's the casual racism that's so shocking in some ways.
The cockroaches.
Yeah. But you have also made kind of clear in the piece that she's sort of likable and that possibly you might like her.
Yeah. When people are brave enough to talk to me on tape, knowing that, you know, I could play it on a national level, I respect them for that. And when they open up and they're being honest, it's hard not for me not to like them and appreciate it because they're trying to help me out. You know, they're trying to help me out by giving me something for my story. And so, and then also, I think it's just important to listen to people, you know, and you know, hear them out. And thanks. Because you know, there's a lot of fear of involved in racism. I think it's based in fear, and then when talking about it, discussing it in public or on the radio, it's very dangerous. People can get upset. There's just all this fear around, and not talking about it doesn't help the fear go away. I think that speaking honestly, even if you're going to offend somebody, is important. It's part of a process of like relaxing and not being afraid.
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, we all categorize people automatically all the time, it seems like, and then dismiss them often. But, you know, without even realizing it.
Yeah, I do that.
We code people as, you know, racist or not, you know, almost like it's like being pregnant or not.
Right.
Then, so what changes when you try to resist those categories, when you spend time with and get to know somebody like Lorraine and think, well, yeah, she is racist and also maybe not horrible?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange thing. Because it really is two things at once. There's two things going on in my mind, and I think there's two things going on in their mind at the same time as well. Because we have, just by nature, I think we have a gene to be distrustful or fearful of others. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the color of the skin. It's just the people who live over there you know, in the next territory, the next high school, the next university, Utah and BYU type things. You know, you can't tell a Utah student from a BYU student apart, but there's such animosity. I think that's something that we have, you know, at birth. But we also have a capacity for compassion, or to learn compassion and to practice it. And that everybody has those going on all the time. It's, you know, whether you're going to speak to the person's fears or you're going to speak to the person's compassion. And I can handle both things in my head. I mean, actually, I can't. Sometimes I get too fearful, I say stupid things, but I try to balance it out. I think other people do too. And so, you know, a normal conversation often has contradictory statements in it, I think.
That makes me think of another series you did that I wanted to ask you about. This was another trip you took. I think it was this past summer, right? When you went to the South and you did this four-part series on burned churches. Well, you should describe what you did.
Well, after the Charleston massacre, about the week after that, there was a news story. Six churches have been burned in the South, black churches. I was like, whoa, I didn't know that black churches were burned in this day and age. That would surprise me. It turns out it's a fairly common occurrence, not just black churches, all churches. There's like five that burn down a day in the United States, three to five. Only 16% are intentionally set. They burn down for lots of reasons, but still, that seemed kind of significant to me, that these churches were burned down in the southern states following the Charleston massacre, and it was at the time when everybody was having a big argument about the Confederate flag, at least in the South. And I wanted to hear the people in the churches and the people in the neighborhoods of the churches speak and talk about what it's like to have a church burned down.
So I went there. And think, here you are, a white man.
Yeah, I'm a white
driving man. Around these...
I think I'm from the most privileged group of people ever to have lived on this planet.
But you're driving around to places where black churches have been burned.
Sorry.
You're driving around to places where black churches have been burned, asking questions as a white man. I mean, you must have had an awful lot of people who didn't want to talk to you.
Yeah, walk into a black neighborhood, they don't see white people very often unless they're police. And so they were much more nervous than I was, because why was I there unless I was there to arrest somebody or to do something like that? And so, it was hard to get them a lot of people didn't want to talk to me, not just black people, white people as well.
And one of the things I like that you did in the piece is those pieces is you often, you tell us that people won't talk to you, and a lot of times you describe them.
Right.
Like you almost make us want to hear from them. You'll describe this person and say, but he wouldn't talk to me.
Right. Like, that's a good trick I've learned.
But you know, journalists don't usually, the thing I really like about it.
Why not?
Right. We don't tell you about our failures. We don't tell you how many doors we had to knock on or how many people didn't want to talk to us.
I know. It's one really good thing I like about podcasting is you can be much more transparent. And it's important to be transparent, to know how the reporters get, you know, gaining access to the information. It's really critical in knowing just what's actually going on. And we just don't get it very much.
But in
podcasting,
some way,
you can say that. And why not?
And also, in some ways, going back to that, the thing about fear,
if
all you ever hear on the radio is reporters who seem perfectly successful in talking to people, then it makes it even scarier to think, what if somebody, you know, how can I have a conversation with somebody that would be risky? Because you think, you never hear failure.
I know, they're going to take my license away or something.
So
you don't have to have a license to do that. I should tell you. I know. Yeah. So
you were in this one town, Warrenville, South Carolina, and the Glover Grove Baptist Church had burned down. And I want to hear a couple of conversations you had there. You talked with two women who they each told you very different things. So I mean, let's hear from this first woman, Teresa Wright.
It was horrible. It just was horrible. We can't understand what happened and why.
Do you think it was a racist hate crime? Do people around here talk about that? Or?
Yes, they talked about it. They said they think it's a KKK.
Who says that?
That's what the people talking about. That's all I can hear out in the street.
Around here in the neighborhood?
Because I know one thing. After that happened, white people was coming on the road over there, putting flags, that flag they took down, and sticking them in the black people's yard.
The Confederate flag?
Yes, sir.
There were white people driving around this neighborhood sticking Confederate flags in people's yards?
Yes, sir. Hmm.
Now tell me about her.
She was an older woman, about 80, and had lived there for a number of years. I can't remember how long. She lived half a block from the church that burned down. There was a neighborhood there right around the church. And what else do you want to know about her?
Well, you also talked with another woman.
Right.
Bessie Jones, who had been a Sunday school teacher at that church.
Right, so after I talked to...
And she said something completely different.
Right, she did. After I talked to Miss Teresa, I started driving around asking white people, have you heard this? About somebody going around putting flags in the yards in that neighborhood? And it's like, they really did not want to talk to me. They was like not going to talk about anything like that, just wanted me to get out of there. But then, yeah, I talked to Miss Jones, Betsy Jones. You're going to play her?
Yeah, yeah, let's play this. This is Bessie Jones, who'd been a Sunday school teacher.
I don't know what happens in other neighborhoods. I can't speak for that. But here, I haven't seen that. I haven't heard that.
Problems?
No racial. I haven't seen, heard no racial problems. And the most wonderful thing about it, if you look at it, if you'd have been anywhere around, you would see that more white brothers and sisters was coming to the rescue of us. They were coming grieving. They were coming lifting us up in the word. So I can't say that I saw that, I heard that.
So what do you make of that?
Well,
just two different women
who
see something really different happening.
Right. That happened a couple times in Warrenville. But the two women lived maybe 100 yards apart, same neighborhood. And I believe both of them.
How can you believe both of them?
Yeah,
one says their Confederate flag's been put in
their... two things in my head at the same time. I think both things are possible. But I like Betsy Jones's take on it, in that it's basically, you know, if you have this in your head, if you have this fear and hatred in your head, that's what you're going to see. That's what's going to manifest in front of you, because karma really is instant, I believe, and it's just the way it works. So if you're projecting fear and hatred, it's going to come back. It's going to happen. And her thing was like, just don't do that. Don't think that. You know, we have this tradition. It's the main thing I learned working on those stories, is it's called the Black Prophetic Tradition. Cornel West has written a book about it. This idea of, you know, turn the other cheek, that is taught the
non-violence.
Christian tradition, yeah. Nonviolence. And they had been practicing that at least since the 60s, consistently. And I just didn't realize it. I should have known. I should have been aware of it. But the black people in the South, Christian black people in the South, have been practicing nonviolence every day of their lives for a long time, and they can do it. So that was a real eye opener for me.
Where are you going to go next?
Well, I'd like to go do a story about the immigrants flooding into Europe. But I don't have the money for that. It's
this might be a
I've been
good
doing fairly well. My podcast, exists because of listener contributions. And it's been going pretty well, but I actually am, I went to Nepal after the earthquake and then a few other trips, and not quite in the black yet, so. But I would like to go there. Because again, have you heard any good interviews with the immigrants?
No.
I heard a really good one with an Iranian 12-year-old girl. It was on the BBC. And he talked to her for, I don't know, they played maybe 3 minutes of this conversation. She left Tehran by herself, and then she'd hooked up with four Afghans because they speak Persian. But she'd left home by herself. And he said, well, how old are you? And she said, 12. And he could not believe it because he said, I thought you were 23 at least. And he said, no, I'm 12. And I was like, whoa, 12-year-old girl leaving home by herself. That's just so brave. And then he let her go. I mean, if I would have... No, I'm going with you. I'm going to stay with you because she's really smart, very interesting.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Carrier, thank you so much for joining us.